Over the past few years, one book I've returned to again and again in trying to understand better the shape of contemporary culture is C.S. Lewis's The Abolition of Man. There's a passage in the book which I've quoted dozens of times, a passage that contrasts the older Christian view of living a good life by tempering the desires to conform to reality with the dominant modern view in which one forces reality to subdue to our wishes. This latter view, Lewis ascribes to the practitioners of magic and applied science alike. It's an arresting coupling, placing magic and technology in the same category. But, as Lewis explains, there are good historical reasons for doing so, reasons that are well understood by the author of a new book called Technosis: Myth, Magic, and Mysticism in the Age of Information. In this provocative and far-reaching work, Eric Davis looks at the many ways in which the history of technology, especially information technology, is permeated with religious dreams and aspirations, especially, as the title suggests, Gnostic aspirations. Davis, who has written for Wired, The Village Voice, Rolling Stone, and Gnosis, told me that the idea for Technosis began almost a decade ago.
In 1990, I attended the Cyberthon, which was an event out here in the Bay Area. I was actually living in New York at the time, but I flew out for this event. And it was really kind of the sort of, you know, Woodstock, both it was a conscious attempt to create a kind of 60s-like a celebration of the new technology. So all of the figures were there, Jaron Lanier and Howard Rheingold and William Gibson and John Perry Barlow and Mondo 2000 crew. And it was that moment of this incredible exuberance and enthusiasm about virtual reality, about the possibilities of new media technologies. And though the full-bodied World Wide Web internet was still many years down the road, people were already kind of envisioning this cyberspace, the idea of cyberspace. And what fascinated me at the time was the amount of sort of mythic energy of the moment, both the ways people were consciously drawing off of a variety of different 60s ideas, from psychedelia to sort of new opportunities to transform human being and to extend human consciousness and create new kinds of societies, et cetera, et cetera. And it just struck me as just amazing the way that this technology, which was just coming to be, could have such powerful mythic resonance. And so I tracked that throughout the early 90s. Any time that a certain kind of religious or mythic or even psychedelic image or idea was bound up with new technologies, I would always pay a lot of attention to it, and kind of fascinated me. And that was sort of the contemporary framework for the things that I was interested in. But then I found that the more I looked back into the history of technology in the West, and particularly in the modern era, there were always these kinds of myths, some of them remarkably similar, some of them quite different. But there was always this sense that there was a kind of technological unconscious, that beneath the rational and utilitarian narratives that we usually use to understand technology, were a whole host of very different kinds of stories, images, and inclinations, many of which are ultimately rooted in the religious imagination.
Davis's book is a detailed and thoughtful account of those religious themes that reoccur throughout the history of technology, as well as an annotated scrapbook of both the mundane and the bizarre manifestations of techno-utopianism, from regulations about the internet to the mass suicide of the Heaven's Gate cult. Throughout the book, the Gnostic theme of escaping the limitations of embodied existence reappears again and again.
One of the interesting ways of looking at that is the intuition that there is something in us that is incorporeal, an essence that is not of matter. And in religious terms, whether or not we interpret this as a soul or a Gnostic spark or an aspect of the world spirit, this idea was pretty much, you know, knocked down by modern science. And yet, something else very revolutionary happened in our cosmology, in our vision of the world, which is that since the 1940s, with the spread of information technology and with the creation of information theory and the spread of cybernetic ideas into society, that we have come to think of information as something that is in essence incorporeal. that even though information is always linked to some arrangement of matter or material forces, that we have this cultural idea, cultural intuition, that there is something in information that is more than matter. And that as we increasingly inhabit this world where we can think of information as a thing into it, unto itself, we unconsciously find ourselves resurrecting very old narratives about identity, about spirit, that are transformed in this strangely secular technological way, and yet still uphold that kind of dualism, that kind of fundamental line between the matter we inhabit and this information spirit that we are becoming. I mean, you can even look at the language of some sort of, you know, corporate futurists like Tom Peters and such, where they'll really talk about the 20th century as being this process of transmuting industrial era technologies into this new world of information and mind. And so you find this drive to this off-world drive that unconsciously reproduces these Gnostic narratives, and hence are open to traditional Christian critiques of Gnosticism in ways that are very interesting, but not always undertaken.
Alvin Toffler, I think, applauded by Newt Gingrich and George Gilder, says something like, I mean, isn't the whole premise of the third wave the idea that matter doesn't matter anymore?
Very much. Mm-hmm. No, Toffler is a prime, and Gelder are both prime examples of this kind of implicit techno-millennialist Gnosticism in terms of this overcoming of matter, which in some, you know, very pragmatic sense, it is the case that we are coming to a place where the ability to imagine things, whether they're new arrangements of molecules or designs of cars or information architectures, and to embody those imaginations in technologies that have immediate social and cultural consequences is speeding up. I mean, we're able to do that very quickly now in a way that was, you know, very difficult even, you know, a handful of decades ago. And so there is this sense of an increasingly high velocity conversation between mind and the material objects that we create in our environment. So in some sense, these stories are reflections of an actual social technological process that we are in the midst of. What really concerns me and what worries me is when they are seen as sort of signs of some new kind of manifest destiny, and when they, you know, disregard the enormous material consequences of our current technological civilization on both, you know, vast numbers of human beings and the biosphere.
One question I have, one source of cynicism, I guess, or skepticism, is how class-based are these kind of new utopianisms? And what I have in mind, somebody's still got to build the building that houses the computer. Somebody still has to deal with matter at some grunt somewhere still is getting his hands dirty.
Absolutely. That vision of information as some kind of disembodied point of, you know, liberatory expression, or the foundation of a new world of mind where economic value sort of arises out of the complex networks of different information sources, that is ultimately a fallacy. And the point at which it's no longer just a philosophical question that you might want to critique is precisely where it interacts with actual social conditions of human beings, that we are never disembodied in that way, that information itself is never disembodied, that there are always material frameworks, and that unless we can reattach our imaginations, our social imagination, our cultural hopes, our vision to those material frameworks, then I see ourselves drifting towards a frightening kind of dystopia where you have a small, highly wired elite that are in some sense becoming post-human in a way that may be very liberatory and interesting in some ways, but in other ways is radically cut off from the actual living conditions of most of the people in the world who are living in an increasingly degraded environment as the costs of the ecological costs of our techno utopianism mount.
Eric Davis, author of Technosis: Myth, Magic, and Mysticism in the Age of Information.